Welcome to a discussion of radical fundamental principles of freedom, rational self-interest, laissez-faire capitalism, and individual rights. The Yaron Brooks Show starts now.
All right, thanks for joining me for hour number two as I broadcast from Baku, Azerbaijan. And this is great. Great that that the Blaze makes it possible for as I travel around the world, as I go to different places, you will get to hear my experiences in all these different places. All right, I want to talk about Irma, the hurricane that is, as we speak, I think, pounding Florida. And, you know, creating immense, damage over there. And I think that unfortunately the worst is yet to come as the storm heads north and hits the Tampa, St. Petersburg area. And, you know, who knows where it goes from there exactly and what kind of damage it causes. It seems like the most, dangerous part of this is the surge, is the water surge as water levels rise. It's interesting. When you read about Florida and how low Florida is and how few high points there are, that it doesn't take much sea rise to cover a vast amount of Florida's land. So hopefully it doesn't happen. Hopefully the hurricane weakens. Hopefully, you know, by the time you're listening to this show on a podcast or something, things turned out to be a lot less dangerous than what everybody is assessing them to be right now. I think the fact that it didn't go through Miami itself and didn't hit directly onto Miami Beach and didn't hit directly into downtown Miami is probably a good thing and is going to result in a lot less damage. But the Tampa area is very, very vulnerable to an earthquake like Irma because it is so low lying. It is very vulnerable to those rising sea levels. You know, this hurricane has become, in a sense, this hurricane and, of course, the previous hurricane that hit Houston just 2 weeks ago, opportunities for kind of two groups to really get all excited. And one is the people claiming, oh, my God, the world is going to end because of global warming. See, we told you so. Look what's happening. All these monster storms and a consequence of global warming and climate change and all of that. I mean, maybe I doubt it, but there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of that, zero. And the Earth has been warming for a while now, and yet for 12 years, we have not been hit by a hurricane of Category 3 strength or stronger. The United States hasn't. So what do you make of that? You know, I don't know what you make of that. And then two in 1 year, okay, maybe there'll be another one. I don't know. But given that we haven't had one in 12 years, you'd probably expect some heavy concentration. By the way, I'm surprised the global warming guys and the climate change guys aren't taking credit for the earthquake, the tragic earthquake in Mexico, the 8.1, massive, massive earthquake. Luckily, off the shore of Mexico, so in the ocean, no big tsunami, which was a relief. And not, you know, a lot of people lost their lives, but nowhere near what could have happened if it had happened on shore. But I'm surprised they're not claiming that's a consequence of climate change. But look, if you go through a period of 12 years without a major hurricane, you're going to get some. They're going to happen. Even since 1970, the United States, again, not counting the last Irma and Harvey and, you know, 2 weeks ago, since 1970, the U.S. has only had four hurricanes of Category 4 or 5. So actually, since 1970, we've only had four or five of these, really strong, four hurricanes, sorry, of Category 4 or 5. But in the previous 50 years, so 47 years, so 1970 to 2017 is 47 years. In the previous 47 years, we had 14 such hurricanes. So we're in a massive lull, right? During President Obama's period, we had only 0.5 hurricanes per year. That's the lowest any president has seen since 1990. Eight presidents dealt with more than two a year, right? That hasn't happened. It happened to George W. Bush, but it hadn't happened since Lyndon Johnson. So We haven't had that many hurricanes in the last 50 years, which is shocking. So would you be surprised if in the next 50 years we had more hurricanes? No, it wouldn't be. But I bet you that every single one of them is going to be blamed on climate change, on warming seas. So, you know, just take that with a grain of salt. Don't take seriously every time these people claim these things. You've got to look at long-term trends. It's not just about what happens in the moment. It's not just about what happens right now. You can't assess whether hurricanes are getting worse or not getting worse based on a couple of years. You have to look at history. You have to look at it's 100 years or so, whatever it is. But you can't just assess this just because two big hurricanes hit. But that's what the environmentalists are going to demand from us. That's going to be what they want from us. So resist that temptation. And you can also say the bigger ones are coming. Bigger ones are coming. In Florida, sticks out there into the, the Caribbean, and it sticks out there towards the Atlantic, and it's just on the path, and it's likely to keep getting hit, and people should think about that. Yeah, you should consider that when moving to Florida. And by the way, insurance rates should reflect that. And that's interesting, right? Because if hurricanes are going to get worse, and if they're going to be more hurricanes, and the statistics would say the answer is yes to both of those, and the climate change people would say yes to both of those. So we agree on that. Then insurance rates should be skyrocketing in Florida, and they should keep going up, and for as long as we don't have a lot, and this is the problem. The problem is that's what they should be doing. And one of the reasons they're not anywhere near what kind of the market would dictate, is because of government guarantees. It's because the government stands behind the insurance policies. It's because the state of Florida is reinsuring, in a sense, buying the insurance from the insurance companies. And, it's like the mortgages that the bank sold and then sold to Freddie and Fannie, to the government, in a sense, that got repackaged and then sold to other people, and then on and on and on, that to a large extent, to some extent, created the financial crisis. It's very similar. When the government is buying your exposure, your liabilities, at a cheap price, it distorts the market. It makes the insurance policies too cheap so that they don't reflect the real risk. And as a consequence, people are given a false signal. If Florida is really, really dangerous, we'll talk about Florida after the coming break and its history and to what extent it is dangerous, you're getting a false signal. Markets are beautiful, truly beautiful, in that they really give you, prices give you signals about how, for example, insurance markets give you signals about how dangerous something is. If it's really, really expensive to buy insurance in a particular location, let's say flood insurance on the coast of Florida, that probably means that it's susceptible to floods. So you would think people would think twice about building there, but they don't, because the insurance, particularly flood insurance, is subsidized. Or, in some ways, even worse, they think, what the hell? Even if I don't have insurance, government's going to bail me out. FEMA is going to write to the rescue. And indeed, the federal government just approved $15.5 billion to basically write checks to people who didn't insure themselves so they can rebuild. So you're rewarding people's lack of planning. You're rewarding people for building in risky areas. You're rewarding people for doing things that don't make any sense. But that's FEMA, right? That's what happens when you federalize. That's what happens when you give government control over a program that should be left to the private sector, insurance. Insurance would be so high in flood areas, in areas that flood regularly, in areas that are hit regularly by hurricanes, that it would at least provide an incentive for people not to live there. And people who chose yes to live there and paid those insurance, they'd be covered. And people who didn't buy insurance and who still lived in places like that shouldn't get any compensation. You know, I have earthquake insurance for California. And if I get hit by an earthquake, I don't expect you in the Midwest to bail me out. And yet most Californians are going to be bailed out by people living in the Midwest, living in the East Coast. Why? It's unjust. It's unfair. It's wrong. That's not insurance. That is subsidy. That is redistribution of wealth. That is theft. So I would want to see FEMA dismantled. I think our emergency response would improve. And I think we would have a more just system where people in one part of the country are not paying for the decisions of people in another part of the country. All right. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show on the Blaze Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Florida, about, you know, its geography, its susceptibility to hurricanes, and the value of civilization. We'll be right back after this.
PhD, author, media contributor. This is the Yaron Brooks Show, the Blaze Radio Network. This is the Yaron Brooks Show.
All right, this is Yaron Brooks. We're talking about Hurricane Irma, you know, and the tragedy, the real tragic consequences. I mean, foreseeable tragedy in the sense that hurricanes happen. And it's not a tragedy in the sense of a man-made tragedy. It's not a tragedy in the sense that it's a chosen tragedy. It's a tragedy, and it's just sad. It's sad that people are going to get hurt, that people's lives. Some people are going to die expectedly, and a lot of property is probably going to be damaged. I thought this was an interesting opportunity to talk about Florida, because, I mean, really think about Florida. Florida is this amazing achievement. Florida is a massive achievement of human ingenuity. It's a massive achievement of civilization. 100 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, but, you know, even in the 19th century, very few people lived in Florida. Florida was a place that was filled with swamps. It was filled with mosquitoes, alligators, crocodiles, you know, the environmentalist dream place, the place they would love all of us to live in. Actually, they don't want us to live anywhere. They don't want us to live. I'm talking about the intellectuals, right? So it was a mosquito infested, and this is the only place on the planet that I, as far as I know, where both alligators and crocodiles live in the same place. I didn't know that. I'm reading this from an article. In the 19th century, a Seminole, I guess, an American Indian, a war veteran, not an American Indian, called it, quote, by far the poorest and most miserable region I ever beheld. This place was awful. Right? It was not livable. Particularly South Florida, where it was just swamps. They call them Everglades today, right? All kinds of nice names you'd think a bunch of soft, cuddly animals lived there. But no, this is harsh, harsh territory. This is not place fit really for human life and human civilization. And yet, the swamps were dried. They were drained. Canals were built. All kinds of, you know, water was pumped, and swamps were drained. And it became much safer, even in terms of mosquitoes and crocodiles and alligators, for humans to live. Islands were built. Literally, islands were built. You know. And millions of people have moved to Florida. And it's beautiful. I mean, you go to Miami, it's beautiful. And what a lifestyle they have. It's hot all year round. It's warm. Warm, sometimes it's hot. It's quite humid, you know, you have to like that. But gorgeous views, amazing development, beautiful development. You know, the wealth is astounding. Florida is, you know, this one of the smart states that has zero state income tax. And as a consequence, encouraged a lot of retired people go there. A lot of businesses go there. It's a thriving place. it's a successful place. The beautiful condo buildings all along Miami Beach, all along Miami, the hotels, it's just an exciting place. It's become, people call Miami the capital of Latin America because many people who live in Latin America also own homes. So the wealthy who live in Latin America also own homes in Miami. It's become a hub for tourists and for people to visit and, but most of all, for people to do business between Latin America and the United States. It's a relatively rich place. 6 million people live on the coast of South Florida from Miami-Dade County up to Palm Beach County. You know, the west coast of Florida, it's some of the densest populated counties in the country and fast growing. You know, Tampa Bay is the fastest growing metro area in the state and I guess the fourth fastest in the nation. I'm getting a lot of this stuff from a CNN article. A CNN article that's, I'm spinning this positively. CNN spins all this negatively because they view development, they view civilization, they view fast growing as all bad things. Oh my God, there's a state that doesn't charge income tax. That's awful. You know, a statist CNN. But it's interesting data. It's interesting information. So a lot of people live in Florida. A lot of people live on the coast in Florida. And it's beautiful. Tampa is beautiful. You know, the bay, St. Petersburg on one side, Tampa on the other side, the developments. I've hung out with friends over there, gone to restaurants over there, the waterfront and, you know, in the bay in Tampa Bay is just gorgeous. And, it's some of the most beautiful real estate there and along the west coast and up the east coast of Florida. People live a good life over there and good for them. And it's civilized. It's civilized. It's safe. And, you know, and yet they are very susceptible to hurricanes. And this is the risk they face. And it's a risk I think they should recognize, and people who live there hopefully do recognize it. It's a risk that they should pay for in the sense of insurance or in a sense of paying for if there's damage. It's their damage. Unfortunately, it's a risk that we have socialized. So a lot of retirees might be in that area and their property might be damaged, but it's taxpayer money from their kids and grandkids who live maybe in another part of the country that's going to pay to fix a lot of the damage. And that's just not right. That's just not moral. That's just not fair. We need to get back to personal responsibility. Now look, we all want to help our neighbor. And voluntary help is wonderful, and you saw a lot of that in Houston, and it was terrific. And if people want to go down there and help people in Florida rebuild, all the power to you. And if you want to donate to a charity to help people rebuild, that's great. And a lot of people do that, and certainly I think that can be an honorable thing to do. You know, if you're not sacrificing, if you're not giving up too much in order to do it. But at the end of the day, you know, people have to think about where they live. People have to consider that. And people have to buy insurance. And they have to pay a market rate for that insurance that recognizes the full risk of where they're living and what they're doing. And to the extent that they suffer damages, it's their responsibility. You know, again, granted that we can all help and many of us can pitch in and all of that is great. So, I mean, Florida is a triumph. It's really amazing to me how successful it's been, but we need to recognize the risk and we need a price to price that risk. And it's important for that. And in order to really price that risk, what we need is to get government out of the way. Isn't that true of so many problems we have in the world today? Just get government out of our way. Very simple slogan, very simple idea, and yet, so difficult. All right. You're listening to the Yaron Brooks Show. We'll be right back after this break.
You won't hear traditional political views here. This is the Yaron Brooks Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
It is truly sad that this hurricane is going to be used by the environmentalists. Irma is going to be, in particular, I think, is going to be used by environmentalists to advocate for restricting development, for restricting economic growth, for penalizing people who live in Florida. Instead of letting market prices let people take the kind of risks that they want to take and are willing to bear the cost of, which is what a free market would do, which is what if government got out of the disaster relief business would happen, if they let insurance actually work. And if we stopped, in a sense, if we stopped redistributing wealth towards disaster areas artificially, and we let just charity work, and we let insurance work, and we let personal responsibility work, environmentalists instead are going to use this opportunity to say, see, we have to restrict building, we have to restrict, you know, where people can live, how they live. Instead of letting the market work, instead of letting individuals make decisions for themselves based on cost and benefit to them, we will get top-down decision-making from a bunch of environmentalists who are convinced that the seas are going to rise and we're all going to drown. Now, it's not that they really care about human beings. Environmentalists, as a movement, they don't care about human beings. It's not that they're trying to save lives. I'd have some sympathy, very little, but still some sympathy for them if they were. But that's not their goal. The fundamental goal is to stop development, to stop progress, to stop technology, to stop innovation, to limit human flourishing. That's the fundamental goal of these environmentalists. Don't let them confuse you into thinking that they really care, because they don't. When they see storms like this, they relish the opportunity now to lecture us on how people shouldn't be living in Florida, and people shouldn't live by the coast, and people should, where should they live? Shouldn't live in California because we've got earthquakes. You know, and we shouldn't live in, let us make those decisions. But, and this is where, you know, we don't do this, let us make those decisions based on a true cost-benefit analysis, based truly on an evaluation of the risks. This article on CNN.com, you know, is just geared towards this idea that, oh, we shouldn't be living in these places. It's awful what we've done to Florida. I view Florida as this massive, massive achievement. It's fantastic that civilization has been brought to this desolate place of swamps and mosquitoes and alligators, and that human beings can live there and live there well and live there beautifully and live a comfortable, really successful life. And yet the environmentalists, you know, what are they saying? You know, the bottom line is, the end of the article says, Mother Nature is boss. Maybe it's time we pay attention to her. And I say no. I say Mother Nature is not boss. I say we are the boss. We as individuals, we human beings, we are the boss. We shape nature to fit us. Instead of worrying about, you know, where people should live and where they shouldn't live, A, let them pay the real price. B, let's think about technologies that save us. Let's think about technologies that maybe dissipate storms. Let's think about technologies that maybe, you know, move storms away from population centers. Let's think about if the oceans are rising, if the environmentalists are right and the globe is warming and the oceans are rising, then how do we protect ourselves? How do we build seawalls? How do we raise the land? We dried the swamps. We create artificial islands. Suddenly we can find ways to raise the land, raise it above sea level, higher. So right now, you know, much of Florida is kind of below 6 feet above sea level. So if there's a 6 feet sea surge, Florida is going to be underwater. But let's raise Florida if we have to. I mean, why is that so ridiculous? Why is that so unimaginable? Let's build buildings that are higher up, taking into account the idea that there will be more floods, that there are going to be more hurricanes. It's just going to be more hurricanes because of the odds, the statistics. But why is the answer always stop? I say no, don't stop. We got a problem. Let's solve it. Let's move ahead. Progress, innovation, construction, development. Let people move to where they want to move as long as they bear the cost. But if there's a problem, if things are warming, you know, buy, you know, let's develop more nuclear power plants so we can afford more air conditioning. Or let's put something in the atmosphere that cools things down. Or let's develop some technology to move storms away from us, or whatever that, whatever it is. Let's not give up on human life. Let's not give up on human progress. Let's not give up on civilization and flourishing and happiness and success as human beings who shape the environment to fit their own needs. I mean, everything we do as humans, everything we do as humans is about changing the environment to fit our lives. Our homes are built from stone and from materials from our environment. We carve out mountains in order to build our homes. We mine for steel in order to build our homes. Our automobiles, everything, everything requires us to go into the environment, chop down trees, dig into the mountains, dig into the earth, scoop up the sand to turn it into silicone to use for computer chips, dig up that oil so we can use in our cars, so we can turn it into plastic, so we can power the world. That's how we survive as human beings. That's how we live at every level, at every stage of human existence. We have changed our environment to fit our needs. Otherwise, we die. We go out of existence as a species. So the solution to so-called environmental problems is not to stop. Stopping is death. The solution to so-called environmental problems is more technology, more progress, more growth, more wealth. We want to get richer. We want to produce more energy. So that when I say, let's raise Florida a few more feet above sea level, people say, oh, okay, let's figure out how to do that. But see, my whole approach to pretty much discussing anything is what is good for human beings? What is good for human beings being successful at being human beings? What is good for human beings to be happy, to be prosperous? And at the end of the day, politically, what's good for human beings is freedom. Economically, what's good for human beings is freedom. And what allows us to flourish and be successful is to use our minds, is to figure stuff out, is to innovate, is to be entrepreneurial. And the entrepreneurs and the businessmen and the innovators and the engineers and the scientists, they're the real heroes of the world in which we live. They make it possible for those skyscrapers in Miami and Tampa not to fall down. In spite of the unbelievable winds, it makes it possible for as much as damage as there is going to be in Florida, for it to be a fraction of the kind of damage that would be if we didn't have technology, if we didn't have innovation, if we didn't have great engineering products, if we didn't have great minds working to build and to create, to make us safe, to shape our environment in ways that are consistent with human flourishing, human happiness, human ability. All right, you're listening to Yaron Brook Show, broadcasting, as I've said many times in the show, from Baku, Azerbaijan. The wonders of technology again, just the wonders of innovation. All right, we're going to be back after this break.
This is the Yaron Brook Show, the Blaze Radio Network. Brooke.
All right, it's actually getting close to midnight here. It's about 10 minutes to midnight in Baku, Azerbaijan, and I'm getting ready to go to bed. It's been a long day, and I've got a big lecture tomorrow at the local university here, where I'm going to talk about freedom and economic freedom and economic liberty and the morality of capitalism. That's a message the whole world needs to hear, and I'm proud and happy to have the opportunity to deliver it to many people around the world, including the last few days in Georgia, in Tbilisi, and now in Baku, Azerbaijan, and then later in the week in Paris and Geneva and Copenhagen and Kiev and Laid him in the air and lots of other places. All right. You know, one great example of that, what I talked about development in Florida, I think was Linda mentioned it on Twitter here, is Disney. You know, Disney came to Florida and saw immense potential in Orlando. But remember what he saw in Orlando. Orlando was swamps. There was nothing there. There was nothing. There was no infrastructure. There was a town, Orlando, you know, it wasn't that big. And, you know, he saw that he could buy this land for relatively cheap because it was garbage land. It was bad land. It was swamp. Nobody wanted it. And he did. He bought it. He dried it. He filled it up. And he built one of the great entertainment centers of the entire world. The world loves Disneyland. Don't we all love Disneyland? It's about human happiness, human flourishing, human entertainment, human enjoyment. Today, would the environmentalists let him build Disneyland? No. No. You can't dry swamps today. They're not swamps. They're Everglades or they're, what do you call it, something water or whatever. Right? Wetlands. That's what they are, wetlands. And they're incredibly environmentally valuable. And it's much more important to preserve the local mosquito than it is to entertain human beings. God forbid we should hurt the mosquitoes or whatever else lives in the swamp. And we don't want to entertain those spoiled children. And think about what Disney did. Not only did he build Disneyland, but think about what everything happened around him. Universal was built and all the other entertainment parks. I mean, you go to Disney World, to Orlando now, and there are a million things to do. A whole industry has arisen there to entertain human beings. How beautiful is that? How wondrous is that? That we have the wealth, we have the time, we have the resources, and we have the brilliance, or at least Disney had the brilliance, to figure out how to entertain us and to create a whole industry to entertain us and to make our lives happy and joyous and just more fun. I love people who make my life more fun. And Disney certainly did that. He did that for me. He did that for my kids. And you got to celebrate that. And yet today, environmentalists wouldn't let him break ground. Think of the thousands, tens of thousands, potentially hundreds of thousands of jobs that are being created because of that. The gas stations that are now built around there, the grocery stores, the all kinds of other entertainments that have arisen around Disney World. And the whole infrastructure. Orlando now is a big city. And the infrastructure all around is world class. The highways around Orlando, from Orlando to Tampa. I mean, that is all Disney. That is all one man. That is all one man's vision. A vision to make human life a little bit more joyful, a little bit more filled with joy. And again, today, we wouldn't let it happen. We'd shut him down. We'd shut him down because of some snail, because of some mosquito, because of some fish, because of wetlands, because of land. I don't think they even care about living things. They just want to preserve Mother Earth in its pristine form, as if that's a good thing. Why is it a good thing? The Earth is here to serve our needs. The nature is here to facilitate human life. We as human beings have the intelligence to change the world to fit our needs, and that's what we must do to survive. So Florida in every aspect, you know, if you travel around Florida and you see where it's being developed and how it's being developed and the achievement that is the coast and the number of people who live there happily and successfully, the beauty of development. I love development. I love skyscrapers. I love cities. And, you know, see Orlando and see Disneyland and see everything else that is being created in this fantastic state. And to see the environmentalists jump all over this crisis, this hurricane, is just a disaster. As I said before, you know, people should have to pay for the choices that they make, in a sense that the market should work and they should have to pay through insurance or through self-insurance, which means they pay for whatever destruction there is afterwards and rely on charity. There's no reason to use force to force people to subsidize them. But other than that, it's none of your business. Somebody wants to dry a swamp, let them dry a swamp. Human life depends on drying swamps. Human progress, human development depends on drying swamps. All right, so as we speak, the hurricane is hitting Florida. I wish everybody along the coast of western Florida and anywhere else where the hurricane might cause damage the best of luck, and hopefully lives will be spared, and hopefully the hurricane will slow down, and hopefully there won't be as much property damage as is predicted. Hopefully most people have left, and therefore their lives at least will be protected. So all the best to all of you in Florida as you head back home sometime later this week probably. And, you know, here on the Aaron Brooks Show, we defend human life. We defend human liberty, human freedom, the human mind, human progress and innovation. We defend progress and flourishing. And don't let the environmentalists, don't let the weather, don't let it crush your spirits. Human beings are here to live, to thrive, to succeed, and to achieve happiness. You've been listening to the Aaron Brooks Show on the Blaze Radio Network. We'll be back next week on Sunday, same time, same place.
Applying the principles of rational self-interest and individual rights on your radio. It's the Aaron Brooks Show on the Blaze Radio Network.